We're going to talk about mothers this morning because it is that time of the year. And there are some elements about motherhood, some things that we need to keep in mind that certainly are good for us as Christians to continually consider, think about, and talk about. And so we're going to spend some time thinking about the idea of honor your mother this morning. As Brother Bill read for us there in John chapter 19, even when Jesus was dying on the cross, even though he was the Son of God, he's literally the creator of all, he still had feelings and thoughts for his mother once he was going to be gone. That's what's expressed there when he says to the disciple whom he loved, John, we know that to be, when he says to John, take care of my mother. That's the message of that verse. And it's because of his love and concern for her, even though she was a physical mother to him and he was the creator of all as God, he had those feelings. And I think that's an important thing for us as Christians today to note, the kind of love and concern that Jesus had even for his physical parents. And as we strive to follow the example of Christ, I think it's good that we keep those things in mind in regards to our parents. And we could say the same thing about fathers to some extent. Certainly there's a difference in how fathers and mothers interact with children, and there's some distinctions between the two, but the same idea is true. In fact, the Apostle Paul combines both together, honor your mother and father, or your father and mother, just like the Old Testament did. But we're going to talk specifically about motherhood this morning and the need to honor our mothers and look at some examples in Scripture that I think will be helpful to us in understanding why we need to honor our mothers. Of course, when we talk about mothers, unfortunately, in this day and age, we just almost have to define everything that we talk about. And while each of us has this concept and idea of mother, it's good for us to consider how that term is defined. And when you look it up in the Webster's Dictionary, you're going to find that it references a female parent, especially one of the human race. And another of the definitions that is there in Webster's defining of this word mother is that which has produced or nurtured anything, source of birth or origin. We see there the focus on motherhood is becoming a mother. But when we look at this word and some of the other areas, some of the Greek words and such that are used and translated mother in the New Testament, we look in Thayer and we find that this idea comes from a root word which means measure. Now there's some discussion back and forth as to whether it's talking about the molder or a manager. And there's some debate regarding that, but when you read what Thayer has to say and look at the definitions and some of the other things that are talked about, we come to understand that this word mother involves the idea of origination or producer and the idea of caring for or providing a secure place. It's not just birth, but it includes taking care of, giving consideration to, providing safety for. We find when we look at this word and study what it has to say that it is much more than just bearing a child. It's caring for a child. And I think one of the places that this is evident to us is in the book of Ruth. Somebody says, no, wait a minute, Ruth's not a mother until the very end of the book. It doesn't say anything about her being a mother. No, but it sure does talk about Naomi. In fact, there's sometimes when I read this book that I really think it could just as easily have been titled Naomi as Ruth. Because it's really the story of Naomi. And when you look at it from this standpoint, it's the story of Naomi as a mother to Ruth. I think we see that in what Boaz has to say about what Ruth had done for Naomi since she had come to Israel. In Ruth chapter 2, verse 10 through 12, we'll read. Ruth chapter 2, verse 10 through 12. She fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I'm a foreigner? But Boaz answered her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Boaz said, the reason I honor you, the reason I favor you, is because you have treated Naomi as a mother. You treated her as one who cared for you. You've cared for her. You've given consideration to her. You've stayed with her to help her. We don't spend a lot of time talking about or thinking about sometimes what Ruth did. Boaz here touches on it in this quick statement. You left your land and your parents to be with her. But what Ruth did is she stayed with a woman who had lost everything so that she would no longer be alone. Why? Because she honored her like we would honor a mother. I think we see in Ruth's action, as Boaz describes it, one who is honoring her mother, yet this is not the woman who bore her, but it is the woman who showed her care and concern. And we'll look at this a little more as we look at some of these other thoughts. But as we consider this idea of mother and the reasons why we ought to honor our mother, some things involved in honoring our mother possibly, one of the things we want to take note is that motherhood starts very early. As each of you know who have had children, preparing for that child is just as much a part of motherhood or fatherhood, if we were doing this on fathers, as taking care of that child after it's born. In Luke chapter 1, verse 24 and 25, we read of Elizabeth. Says she conceived, and for 5 months she kept herself hidden, saying, "Thus the Lord has done for me in the days when he looked on me to take away my reproach among people." And later in that same chapter, in verse 39 through 41, in those days Mary arose and went with haste into the hill country to a town in Judah, and she entered the house of Zechariah and greeted Elizabeth. And when Elizabeth heard the greeting of Mary, the baby leaped in her womb, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. While this doesn't enumerate the things that these ladies were doing to take care of their unborn children before they came into existence and were able to be held in the world, it does emphasize that they were aware of them and they had care in regards to them. They considered them to already be their own. We've all been associated with, if we ourselves were not, those who took extra measures of precaution because they were carrying a child. They were expecting later. Sometimes these things were medically necessary. Sometimes it was just a decision of the parents to say, we're going to stop doing this because we don't want to cause extra harm. That's the beginning of motherhood. Because we understand that that child begins at conception. We understand the words of the psalmist in Psalm 139. You formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your words. My soul knows it very well. Those who are bearing children know that child is there. And sometimes, even without realizing it, they take precautionary steps to already begin caring for that child. Certainly, we see the new nursery and the clean sheets and the extra baby things and the toys that grandparents give and all those sort of things that keep piling up as we wait for that time for them to come. But even there are subtle things. That's the beginning of motherhood. Acknowledging and recognizing at that point that I have a responsibility for this young person. In fact, when we go read about Hannah, we see that Hannah was concerned and started preparing for a child even before she conceived. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 11. Hannah vowed a vow and said, "O Lord of hosts, If you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head. She was making preparation for her son before she even conceived a son, as she asked God to give her one. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about getting care and concern. How many have we been associated with or heard of who are looking to adopt children, who begin taking steps to prepare things for that child before they even know if they can or what child they might be able to get? Your mother cares for you from the very beginning. She prepares, and it is a never-ending devotion that she has to that child. I'm aware in our society there are some exceptions, but once again, those are exceptions. We're talking about the things as they were designed, as they were put in place. The mother loves from the beginning, prepares sometimes even from before, and she loves you more today than she did when she first learned you were coming. I know with some of us, it's hard to believe that our mothers can love us more now that they know who we are than they did before they got acquainted with us. But they do. And she's shown that love and devotion through your entire life. And I'm also aware, I'm talking about new mothers and young mothers and such to an audience full of grandparents. But there's a sense in which grandparents do just as much preparation as parents do when they learn those babies are coming. And grandparents have a responsibility, and we denote this officially in our nation as Mother's Day. But grandmothers have that kind of love as well, that kind of care and concern. Maybe in some ways what we're trying to do here is not just remind us of why we ought to honor our mothers, but also remind us why mothers ought to be honorable, the things that make them the kind of person that we would and could and will honor. And I think one of the things that crops up that we need to recognize in regards to motherhood, because motherhood as we defined it and looked at it is one who cares for and protects, one who guides and considers, and that means discipline. That means she's going to direct, sometimes with no's, sometimes with yeses, sometimes with ain't no way, sometimes with great emphasis, sometimes with just calm statement. But she's going to be a guiding influence and disciplining and correcting and teaching. In Hebrews chapter 12, we see this illustrated in talking about sons. We read there beginning in verse 5, "Have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him, for the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives." And if you read in the context there in the book of Hebrews, you recognize that's one of the places among many where they take the relationship of a father and a son and use it to instruct us about God disciplining his children. We all remember the passage that if he doesn't discipline you, then you are illegitimate and not sons. Why? Because that's the obvious thing that a parent does. And a mother does that, certainly. She begins with discipline. In the Proverbs, we recognize that this discipline is a part of the overall teaching process, as we intimated as we started talking about this particular point. In Proverbs 1 and verse 8 and 9, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck." Sometimes when we read from the Proverbs and from the Psalms, we read that flowery language when you think hyperbole, we think fancy words, we think all these things, but think for a minute what the wise man is saying here. A
graceful garland for your head, a crown of sorts, and a pendant around your neck, decoration. They are what makes you pleasing, what makes you successful, what gives you the ability to see increase. Those things come from the discipline and teaching of your mother and father. Without the teaching and direction of parents, where would we be? Without the constant watch and care of our mothers, especially when we are young and just born, we would be a big mess. That's what we would be. Unable to accomplish anything. Because we're entirely dependent upon others at that point. And as we grow, we gain some independence. But the writer of Proverbs reminds us, keep listening to those who cared enough to take care of you when you couldn't take care of yourself. That's how we honor. We submit to their discipline. We use their teaching. Children, obey your parents and the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you and you may live long in the land. And I'm convinced that that is a general, literal truth. You're going to live longer if you listen to the advice and teaching of your mother and your father. And I emphasize that a whole lot more when I'm teaching to a whole audience of children, those who are still at home. But we'll emphasize it just a little bit here, just in case there's a few kids still here. Because not only does it emphasize them, but it reminds us as parents the great responsibility that is placed upon us. This is the first commandment with promise. Think for a moment. You go back to the Old Testament and read those Ten Commandments. It starts with what? The greatest commandment and the second one that's likened to it. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, and all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's one and two. There's some promise in there, but it's not inherent in the commands. It's in the message that comes with the commands. But with honor your father and your mother, that it may go well with you. There's a promise there. Things will go well if you listen for the advice of your parents. It gives increase. And it's something that we can see. I think there's a few examples of that. As we look at some examples of those who receive teaching from their mothers in particular, the first one, of course, that often comes to mind when we think along these lines is Moses. We know the story of Moses. He was born when Egypt was saying, kill all the boy children. His mother and father hid him for 3 months, as long as they possibly could. And then she put him out in the reeds in a basket. And he was found by Pharaoh's daughter. Pharaoh's daughter decided to raise him for her own. And, of course, Moses' sister was there. Pharaoh's daughter wanted someone to nurse the child. And we read in Exodus chapter 2, verse 9 and 10, Pharaoh's daughter said to Moses' mother, take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages. So the woman took the child and nursed him. When the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses because she said, I drew him out of the water. And if we stop right there, that just wouldn't really tell us a whole lot about what mother did. But look at what's said in Hebrews chapter 11 regarding Moses. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Look at what Moses is said about Moses there. He esteemed the reproaches of Christ. Where in the world would Moses have learned about Christ? And keep in mind, Christ is not Jesus' second name. It's a title. It's the equivalent of Messiah in the Old Testament. Where in the world would Moses have learned of a Messiah? Where in the world would he have learned of a reward that was beyond what he could have had being in Pharaoh's family in the land of Egypt? There's only one place. And that's from his mother when he was very young. We continue reading the story of Moses in Exodus. We find that as he grew older, he understood what he was set aside for, what his purpose was. He knew what God had, at least to some extent, what God had in plans for him. What God wanted him to do, to lead his people out of Egypt. He learned that from his mother. And he paid attention to that teaching, and it made him the man that he was. It was because of her teaching that Moses is written in Hebrews chapter 11. I think the language there impresses that upon us. Now, in Mark chapter 6, we read of an entirely different situation, going the other direction, but still someone who listened to their mother. An opportunity came, we read in Mark chapter 6 and verse 21, when Herod on his birthday gave a banquet for his nobles and military commanders and the leading men of Galilee. For when Herodias' daughter, and we read elsewhere her name was Salome, when Herodias' daughter came in and danced, she pleased Herod and his guests. And the king said to the girl, "Ask me for whatever you wish, and I will give it to you." And he vowed to her, "Whatever you ask me, I will give you up to the half of my kingdom." And she went out and said to her mother, "What should I ask?" And she said, "The head of John the Baptist." Why do you think she went to her mother and asked? Because she listened to the advice of her mother. She'd been taught from very young that her mother would tell her the things she needed to know, would give her good advice. We recognize the error of that because of the wickedness of her mother. But she gave attention, and it was because of the teaching and practice of her mother that Salome was the girl that she was. It led to her destruction, as far as we know, but still, it teaches the influence and teaching of a mother. And then, of course, we have the other one that readily comes to mind when we think about mothers and grandmothers teaching their children, and that is Timothy. In 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 5, the Apostle Paul says, "I'm reminded of your sincere faith, a faith that dwelt first in your mother Lois and your mother Eunice, and now I am sure dwells in you as well." Paul said, "You are the faithful servant of Christ that you are today because of the teaching, the influence, the direction, the guidance of your mother, who was influenced by her mother." And I think here is one of the places that is really a place that we as more mature Christians who have grown children who are out of the house need to give attention to. Our grandchildren can very well be who they are because of who our children became from our teaching. Now, for some, that might mean that we may need to spend a little extra time with our grandchildren trying to help them out. Others, it may mean that because of what we see in our children, we recognize our grandchildren are probably going to be all right, at least in a general sense. But it should give concern to all of us, whether we're parents who have grown children that are still waiting for grandchildren at some point, or not knowing whether they would come, or we are already grandparents, that our influence matters. Now, Paul doesn't enumerate when the grandmother influence was there in Timothy's life. She may have been just as much a part of his teaching and instruction as his mother was, considering the particular society that they were in. It could be that Timothy rarely saw his grandmother, and it was because of her influence over her daughter that Timothy became who he was. The point is that the influence and teaching of a mother has a great deal to do with the kind of child, of person the child will grow up to be. It's not the only thing that will determine that. And certainly, we've all seen where those who were raised up by godly and righteous parents who were righteous and godly when they lived at home, and even sometimes for a short while after they left home, because of the influence they got themselves under after they were away from home, they strayed away from the straight and narrow.
And while I don't excuse them for that, I do want to acknowledge that generally those who have grown up under a godly influence don't turn out to be wicked, evil people. They may turn away from the Lord, but they still remain good, honest, upright folks in a general sense. It won't save them, but we can see the influence of those parents that taught them moral uprightness, even then, even when they turned from the Lord. Certainly we desire to be the other. In chapter 3 of 2 Timothy, we read, "As for you, Timothy, continue in what you have learned and have firmly believed, knowing from whom you learned it, and how from childhood you have been acquainted with the sacred writings which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith in Christ Jesus." Paul says, Timothy, you know where you learned the things you learned. And I think probably the majority of what he's talking about is what he's learned from Paul and inspired men in his later years. But I think because he includes that, the scriptures you've known from childhood, at least Timothy would have remembered, I learned those things from my mother. She taught me those things because she cared for me. Because she had concern for my well-being. She wanted to know that I would do well. That I would serve God. So Timothy once again is reminded by Paul that it's because of your mother's influence that you are who you are today. Because of the discipline, the teaching, because a mother starts very early preparing for her child. Because motherhood is a lifetime effort. It's a lifetime effort. At first had never ending, but of course we recognize death brings an end. At least to our influence here in this life. But it is a lifetime effort. And once again, I want to turn back to the book of Ruth. And emphasize again, here we have an account of one relationship that is between a woman and her daughter-in-law. It's not a natural mother through birth, but one who became a daughter, even late in life. And we see the influence of Naomi in Ruth's life, even when Ruth is old enough to be making decisions for herself. I don't know how old Ruth is at this point. I don't know that the book gives us any indication about ages at all. There's very little about time in this book. But Naomi said to Ruth in chapter 3, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative with whose young women you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies, then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." And she replied, "All that you say, I will do." That's an entirely different response than Naomi got when Naomi told Ruth, "Go back to your mom and dad." But in both instances, we see evidence that Naomi was looking out for the best interest of Ruth, even after Ruth was old enough to make her own decisions. And I think it's important that we note that. The influence of a mother does not end. And I was going to use this example even if Miss Aideen hadn't been here. But there's been many a time that she said something about, "Thank you for coming and picking me up," and I respond, "If I didn't, my mother would get on to me." And her response was, "Yes, she would." I'm still influenced by my parents. My mother in particular. I stop and think about her instruction and my dad's. I don't want to leave him completely out. He may hear this lesson sometime. I still hear their instruction in my mind sometimes. It's a little fuzzy now because of the years. But I take into consideration those things when I make my determinations. And I know you do as well, even those of you whose mothers are gone from this earth now.
It's not because we still consider ourselves under the reign and rule of our parents, but it's because of the influence they have given through the years and the experience we have had of generally things going better when we listen to their instruction. In verse 16 of Ruth chapter 3, we continue, when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did you fare, my daughter?" And she told her all the man had done for her, saying, "Six measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, 'You must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" She replied, "Wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today." Ruth gave attention to her mother-in-law's instruction because she trusted her, because she'd been a guide and an instructor and a protector and a helper during all this time. And she expected that she would continue to be so. And once again, I want to emphasize, this is not a mother-born-daughter situation. This is an after-the-fact. Naomi looked at Ruth as her daughter. I wonder sometimes if the general idea of mother-in-law might be a little better off if we looked at it more as mother than mother-in-law. If they looked at us more as son or daughter than in-law. Can't speak for everybody else, but I suspect my mother-in-law is just as concerned about my well-being as my mother is, and I listen to her advice as much as I do my mom. Generally, it's the same advice, but still. It doesn't take a birth to make a mother, and that's the point here. Whether your children are adopted, I've got friends that have some adopted children and some not. I have some who raised their natural children and then they went into the foster system and ended up adopting more children. Those children look at them as parents just as much as their natural children did. Because mother is not just a bearer of, but it's a protector and a guide. And because of that, we ought to honor our mother. And we ought to honor our father as well. Proverbs 31, beginning in verse 28, we recognize this particular passage. The worthy woman, and it says, her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. "Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in her gates." It doesn't matter whether your mother is still here with you or she has gone on. It is, at least in a major portion, because of her and her molding and guidance that you are who you are today. If we give attention to her righteous instruction, we recognize and understand that she wants what's best for you, even if your hair is already gray as well. We need to honor our mothers. For without her, very likely we would be nothing. I hope these have reminded us of the importance of our role as parents as much as our responsibility to them. More so, we need to recognize the relationship we have with God, our Father, and we need to honor Him. You know, at least in a general sense, all the things we said about mothers and their care for their children and children's need to honor and listen to their mothers apply to our relationship with God.
That's why the father-son analogy works so well in describing our relationship to God. And one of the things we talked about when we were talking about honoring our mothers is living in accordance with the principles that we were taught. We honor our mother best when we behave the way she happens to behave. And I say that, I recognize there's some bad mothers out there. We read about Herodias. And so there's some exceptions, but I'm talking to folks who are concerned with serving God. Folks who generally have been raised by godly or at least righteous, good, morally upright mother. If we want to be pleasing to God, if we want to honor Him, then we need to live in accordance with His command, with His teachings. And that requires that we do all the things that He's given for us to do. James says if a man offends in one point, he's offended in all. Simon the sorcerer was held accountable because the thought of his heart was not right when he attempted to buy the gift of the apostle. We need to be right with God. We understand the need to become a part of the family of God, the need to submit ourselves to His will, confessing our belief in the Savior, being buried in baptism so we can have our sins washed away after we have turned from them, be added to the family of God, and we understand that that's an ongoing relationship that requires ongoing obedience. And if we look this morning and find there's something in our life that's amiss, that's not right in the sight of God, then we need to correct it because we are dishonoring God by keeping that in our life. And if you find yourself in that situation, pray to God, turning from your sin and asking Him for forgiveness, and He's promised that He will. If it's something that needs to be corrected publicly, time and opportunity is yours. Why not come, Lord, stand and sing to Him.